Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Go really electric with an EV or plug-in hybrid from the Kia e-range.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Okay, it's back to work, the workplace, not to work, because most people have been working very hard during the pandemic at their home place, but it's back to their workplace for so many on Monday. Now, Mary has contacted us on behalf of a friend of hers who's upset at the moment. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Tell us about your friend and why she's upset about Monday.
Oh, she's so upset, Joe. My friend cares for her elderly father.
Okay.
And two things happened during COVID. The first thing, like all over the country, she started to work remotely.
Yeah.
And it was a great success. And her employer was delighted and thought productivity even went up. But the second thing that happened is that her dad started to fail and deteriorate a bit. He's extremely elderly. So it was absolutely a win-win situation. She was at home. He doesn't need 24-hour care, but he does need somebody in the house. His mobility is impaired a little bit, and he needs bathroom help and stuff like that. So that worked out great. But she heard from her employer now that she's been called back to the office.
Okay.
Now, it's the, you know, there's a phased, I think they're calling it, where you go back a few days. And that sounds great. But for the likes of her, it doesn't, because the couple of days she's to go in to the office, who looks after her dad? So she has got 2 hours care a week where somebody comes in and helps to bath him. But he's falling a lot. And she's explained to her employer, I'm doing the job from home. You're very pleased with the job. Mm-hmm. I can to sort of kill two birds with one stone and be at home and look after him. She doesn't have to be. He's in the next room. She set up her little office. It's all working brilliantly. It's a win-win situation for everybody. But the employer is not being flexible. And if she needs to mind her dad on those 2 days, she's to take holiday leave, which means all her holiday days will be gone. She'll have no respite. And they're not being a bit flexible about it at all. The only thing she can do, there's a terrible shortage of carers in the country. So she'd have to get one privately, which she's not paid enough to be able to do that. And I just feel that...
And what is the demand from the workplace to be in the workplace? Is it 1 day, 2 days?
It's 1 or 2 days. They'll probably start with 1 day, which, Joe, when I heard that first, I thought, actually, that's grand. But she said, but what do I do if I'm gone from the house between travel and doing your 8 hours,
well, does
you
she,
know, work?
Does she know, Mary, why, if she says, and I heard Bernard Harbour of Forza there on the 1 o'clock with Justin, and he did, Forza represents an awful lot of public sector unions and state sector unions, and he's saying, I don't know what evidence there is for this, he's saying productivity actually increased when people were working from the home place rather than in the workplace.
Yes, and she said she felt that too. And in discussions with her employer agreed that that was the case, but that, you know, things have to get back to normal now. Where really, what's, you know, people talk about this new normal. Things will never get back the way they were. And I think that the remote working has been a huge success in Ireland.
Okay, let's listen, you know, let's listen to a clip from Dolores's email to us.
I am sole carer for my elderly dad. He has mobility issues, making him a high risk for falls and personal care issues. I have been working from home and delivering my job in an effective manner for almost 2 years due to the COVID pandemic, and I'm now being told to return to the office next week, despite being a carer and doing my job effectively in tandem at home. I have explained to my boss that my dad is at a high risk for falls and has some toileting issues. However, I must return to the office next week despite all of this.
So the key word there is in tandem. I've been working at home in tandem and looking after her very elderly father. By the way, we're talking, this is on the base of Monday is a D-Day for a lot of people going back to the workplace. Not work, people have been working from home, but going back to the workplace, a lot of companies are staggered. I think in this case, it's going to be 1 or 2 days initially. Joe at rt.ie 51551 is the text number. Peter, you're listening. Your point, please.
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to say I deeply sympathise with the lady who's had to look after her dad. But I've had similar circumstances myself where I've had to give up work to look after my children at home when my wife passed away. But, I've heard a little bit more than in your chat with that lady. Mm-hmm. What my point was, I couldn't understand why, you know, if there was no pandemic, the lady would never have worked from home. So what would have happened then? You know, why is the employer being asked to take the hit? Now, as the other lady explained there, productivity hasn't gone down. So I can't understand why he's insisting on her going back to the office or wherever it is. But the point I wanted to make is that Why should the employer be taking the hit? I mean, everybody's circumstances are different. People have children to look after, so children to be cared for, you know, elderly parents, you know, young children have to be brought to a crash, maybe didn't have to be brought to a crash before the pandemic, or during, you know what I mean? So
you're, to put it another way, your strong point is that the pandemic has given the likes of Mary's friend, Dolores, we're calling her, 4 days working from home, whereas heretofore it was 5 days in the workplace.
Right, yeah.
Is that not a good bonus for the pandemic, Mary? That a discussion and a situation that people talked about for years, people working from home, which there was hemming, hawing and flimming and flying, and it never happened, like so many things. But then the pandemic came along and suddenly it was doable. But now the situation from Monday is that your friend Dolores will have 4 days working from home. Previously, she had zero. And she'll have one day in the workplace. Previously, she had five. That's Peter's point.
That's Peter's point. And I take his point. And I do not think that employers should take the hit. I completely agree with him. But also, as he identified there, productivity has gone up. This has been a huge success. Apart from the sorrow and everything else of COVID, and I'm not, you know... Mm-hmm. Saying that that's, you know,
of course,
good in that way.
That's a given, yeah.
That's a given. But this has been a great success. Like, if this was a trial project, we would all be saying, this is wonderful. And I know your speaker, I'm sorry, I forgot.
His name is Peter, thanks.
Peter said that, you know, before COVID, like, what would she have done? But the fact of the matter is, we've had COVID. Situations have changed for all sorts of people. And I really think that if employees were supportive of their bosses and worked from home, they could have gone on the pandemic unemployment. They kept working, some of them, and worked from home, that now it's the turn of the employer, if it's of no cost to him, to support and be flexible. That's all people are asking.
But the PUP, the pandemic unemployment payment, was 350, I presume.
Yeah.
And that was lower than the average industrial wage.
It was.
In fairness,
still,
why would some
people did go on it. Some people, God love them, had to go on it. I'm not saying, you know, that people jumped on it. But I really do think that employers now could, if possible, I mean, it isn't always possible, I'm not saying right across the board, but when this employer has actually agreed that it's working grand, that productivity, you know, is up, why they would do that and say, no, look, you have to come back in. Now, she is not, my friend is not very, very well paid. She's the average wage.
Yeah.
So if she has to pay for a person to come in and mind her dad for that 1 or 2 days, it actually isn't going to be worth her while working.
So
then she's going to be relying on the state. Do you know what I mean? It's a vicious circle.
It's a catch 22. I'm hearing a lot of catch 22s over the last few days about housing, etc. Peter, what about that point?
It's a fair point. But I can't understand why the employer is insisting, if it's been advantageous to him, why is he insisting on her coming back to work? I don't understand that.
Well, I presume
as the lady pointed out, there are lots of positions where it's not possible to work from home. I'm thinking about medical people, hospital people, you know, hairdressers, whatever. It's just not possible to work from home.
Shop workers,
I don't know what this lady does, but I'm just saying that it shouldn't be down to the employer to take the hit. But it would appear from what she's saying is that he's not taking a hit, which is a little bit surprising.
Well, is the employer saying, Mary, can we try this and see how it works? Or do you think they just want to fill the offices up again because they have expensive offices?
Well, that's what I'm beginning to wonder, because this isn't a trial. Their attitude is, yes, they've been encouraged to, that it's a phased, blended approach, and they are starting with one, possibly 2 days a week, and that's the way it's going to be, and there's no negotiation. They did say, now, how can we support you in this? And her attitude
is... Is she a member of a union?
I don't know, actually.
I don't know what area she's in, but if she's in the public sector... It's the most unionised part of the workforce, so hopefully she is. I don't know what she works at.
I don't know.
Peter, what's your own situation? Can I ask if it's not intrusive?
I gave up work as a full-time professional about 10 years ago. My wife passed away. I have a child with considerable special needs, so I had no choice, really. But I just took it and got on with it. Lucky enough, my financial circumstances allowed me to do it.
Okay.
I just got on with it, and I never thought that my employer should be facilitating me to work from home at the time. Maybe at times were different then.
Okay.
As you said, there's a lot of people in circumstances going back to work now. They're going to have to find alternative ways to do what they were doing over the last 18 months. So.
Okay. Yeah. Peter, thanks indeed, and kind regards to you and your daughter. Mary, kind regards to you and your friend, and indeed her father. Siobhan, retail workers were mentioned there. They've been working almost, especially supermarket workers, have been heroic. Not the best paid in the world, but they've been, everything you hear about retail workers over the last 2 years has been important and heroic. But you have sent us an email, and I don't know whether you, about working with the public since the shops have fully reopened. What's it like, Siobhan?
Honestly, going to work these days is nearly next to impossible.
Okay.
I've been working in retail full time for about 5 years now, and the customers come in. And I feel like it's because of COVID and everything was closed for so long that people just, they don't want to wait for anything. And they are so abusive.
Mm-hmm.
It's just constant shouting and cursing. If you can't get them for the right now, they don't care about you as a person. They don't see you as a person anymore.
Do you want to give examples, if you can, Siobhan.
So in the email I wrote in, I was just saying as an example, a woman the other day, she wanted, what she said to me is, I want the thing over there, and was making hand gestures.
Okay.
I had no clue what she was talking about.
Right.
So I was like, can you give me an indication of what it is?
Yeah.
You know, just so I have any idea. And instantly went straight to shouting, why don't you know what I'm talking about? You work here, get it for me now.
And that was
just not good enough.
Was there an expletive in there?
There was. Yeah.
There it goes.
Yeah.
She wanted you to play charades with her to find out what she was looking for.
Yeah, they constantly come in, and you should know what they're talking about.
And would people not realise that shouting is in COVID times? It's just gone. You cannot shout. You cannot shout at a wedding across the table. You cannot shout on the street. You cannot shout in a bar. Do not shout. There's an aerosol coming out of your mouth like a small cloud that's either spreading or if you're breathing in, collecting COVID. Okay, other examples for the retail workers. By the way, let me come out another way. How are staff levels?
In the last 2 months, I'd say, 8 people have left and they've managed to hire 2. It's the same everywhere.
Where are the eight people gone?
They've left. They've just, as far as I know, I think 2 or 3 of them have gotten jobs. I know 2 of them mentioned mental health reasons that they were leaving, that they just couldn't handle it anymore. And the other 3, I don't think, had jobs at the time, but have gotten since.
And is this, insofar as you can judge, is it a particular age group that are abusing people post-COVID, so to speak? If we ever live in a post-COVID world, we won't. Post-lockdown.
I hate to say it, but it is people that generally, I want to say about 40 and over.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have people coming in and they'll be in their 30s and their delivery will be delayed And I'll be like, okay, these ones are going to get angry and they'll be annoyed. And it's understandable why you would be, but they never are.
And what's it? They've had a bad day and they're going to explode and it's you that has to take it.
Yeah. Oh, I've been told that on a few occasions. Oh, I was just having a bad day. I knew I was going to take it out on someone.
And it just happened to be you, who's working for not the highest paid workers in the country by any stretch. Working odd hours, to say the least.
Yeah.
On your feet all day, to say the most.
Yeah.
I'm not presuming, Siobhan, but do you make the decisions in your shop about?
Absolutely none. Okay. Absolutely none.
How do you react? Like, do you go up or go down? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Do you go high or go low, as they say?
When I started working in retail, I was way too quiet to say anything to anyone. I've gotten to the stage now where if you're going to shout and curse at me, I'm not going to shout and curse at them, but they can very clearly tell that I'm annoyed. I have no problem doing that now. Like in that example that I sent in the email, that woman now has to wait a few weeks for her product that I could have gotten for her faster. But you shouldn't be allowed to speak to someone like that and then expect everything to be handed to you. That's not how it works.
And as I say here, I'm not a personal shopper. I'm not here to pick things up off the floor for you. Do people just, if something falls off a rack, they just leave it there?
Oh, they don't even, it's not that it falls off. They will pick it up off the shelf and put it on the ground to see, will that look nice in my house? Leave it there and walk away.
Okay.
They'll do it in front of you. They don't care. No one cares anymore.
And are you generalising too much, Siobhan?
If you could see the mess that we have seen every single day, I promise you, you're not think I'm generalising.
Are you given any training for this? Would any training deal with this?
To deal with that? No. Honestly, like I said, it's only since COVID. I've never experienced it before the way that
Has anyone said to you when you, push back? Has anyone said to you when you push back, I'm going to report you to your manager? Or can I see the manager? You know that phrase.
Oh, they do. But it's my opinion on that is I only act negatively towards customers after they've done something that is just unacceptable. So if you want to call my manager to complain that I wasn't nice after you were horrible to me, go for it.
Okay. And you're saying this is not an isolated incident. Will you stay? No. You mentioned some of your... Some of your friends have left for mental health reasons. Would you would you stay in that job if you feel you're being you're being abused on it and it's not not isolated incidents?
I'm actively looking for other jobs at the moment. I'm considering going back to college next September purely because there isn't much left of me staying in retail at this stage.
Now, a lot of restaurants are saying we can't get people back because the PUP is a better option.
Yeah, so many people refuse to go back to work now as well, so it's making it harder.
Is that happening in the shops as well?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Siobhan, are you working again? Do you work Sundays in your job?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
People forget that as well, and Saturdays, and bank holidays, a lot of shops are open. I know there's various rosters and systems. Anyway, Siobhan, Siobhan, thanks indeed. And maybe it'll remind people, like retail workers... have been frontliners as well. And they kept us going in their supermarkets and in their other essential services. Siobhan, thanks indeed. That's Siobhan.
No,
Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Well, Joanne, who was talking to us earlier on the week, 5 children, 12 months to 12 years, herself and her partner working, are in the trap. They're not eligible because the two of them are working to get on a housing list. They're not eligible for any housing assistance payments or rent allowance. And so they have to rent because they cannot get together the deposit that the central bank insists that must be there to initiate a mortgage. There were 100% mortgages available. As you know, they're no longer available. And Joanne was at her wit's end. She's effectively forced out, and it's now 4 weeks away, will be forced out, so to speak, in 4 weeks away, and cannot get alternative rental accommodation. Just cannot get it. Janet, what's your situation? Good afternoon.
Hiya, Joe. How are you? Well, our situation, I suppose, started 2 years ago, but certainly from January of this year, we found out that the house we are currently renting is going to be sold.
Okay.
We knew we had a few months, but we weren't given an actual timeline. When we moved into the house 2 years ago, it was under the assumption that it was a long-term lease. We were talking 10 years, which personally for us, it was a time to save, a time to get things sorted, to potentially buy ourselves and get on the property ladder. We moved into the house in June 2019 and unfortunately we were hit with a blow 2 months later and I was diagnosed with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So it began kind of a whirlwind of, like many households, but this was our situation where it started with me obviously having to have surgery, radiotherapy. We had a 1.5-year-old at the time. And my partner obviously had to take time off work. So slowly but surely, we're dipping into our savings because wonderful as the healthcare in this country is, the admin side of it is not so wonderful. And although you have a medical card, you have to pay for so much and et cetera, et cetera. So,
when must you leave your your rental accommodation?
Well, that's part of our problem. We don't know and we're not being given a definite date. We may be here for...
Have you looked around for other, what's available?
Yeah, from January, pretty much, it's been like a labour of love every day.
Okay.
I've gone from looking at our rental options, which are just unaffordable to us, because obviously I'm still out of work. We're too rich for the housing list.
Yeah,
I use that term loosely.
Yeah, well, I know you do, Jenny Mac.
We're too poor to get a mortgage. We've looked at rebuilding Ireland. We've looked at it all. And not only given our circumstances currently, we can't show proof of savings for a year because obviously we haven't been able to save. Even though we have told them we can get hold of a deposit, and for the type of mortgage we would be looking for, we would be financially better off than we currently are. My partner also has a 12-year-old daughter, so we can't move to the other side of the country.
Okay.
We have to be part of her life. But we have looked at every option. We've looked at travelling as far as 2 hours away from where we currently are, willing to commute that 2 hours up, 2 hours down to pick up his daughter, whatever it takes. And we are hitting a brick wall everywhere we turn. And then they stick the knife in and they tell you that because you had cancer, I won't get life insurance. So then nothing I ever bring into the house can be held accountable towards the mortgage.
Can be part of the assessment.
Exactly.
Is that true? Did they completely?
Well, so they've told me, yeah. So you can only go on what you're told. I've
and
emailed
in terms
CDs.
Of, okay, and you've got that's been confirmed. But you mentioned, and Joanne was making this point, even when she started looking for new accommodation, because the number of rentals has decreased, and we had a number of accidental landlords saying they're getting out because it's not worth their while, the tax and the hassle and the future that's coming down the road seems to be very anti. Landlord, so to speak, and Ireland has a thing about landlords anyway, even the name. But one of the things that Joanne discovered, even when she was looking at the rents that were being demanded, they were significantly higher than the rent she's currently paying.
Absolutely. It doesn't even come close. Any rentals in our catchment area that are suitable for what we need, you're looking at a minimum of 500 to 600 euro extra a month in our area.
Wow.
And we don't have that at the moment. You know, if we had, we'd have to suck it up. We need a roof over our head. Our daughter's due to start big school next year. I don't even know where I'm enrolling her. Do you know, you just kind of feel you're trying your best to do everything honestly, Joe, honestly. And they're leaving you with no other option but to be dishonest. Insofar as you'd actually nearly be at the point where you'd have to lie and say you're a single mother just to get on the housing list. And you don't want to go that route.
No, but that's
what they're driving you to. Like, you don't, you know... It's so upsetting and so frustrating. And I just, that's why after hearing Joanne the other day, I totally could empathise with where she was coming from. You know, And we are only two people in a massive, massive pool of people in this country.
Yeah, it's
not fair.
They used to call it a gap. It's now a Grand Canyon of a gap. It's a
absolutely.
Say with us, Janet, Joe at RT.ie, 51551 is our text number. Paul Bryerham, a lot of people know Paul, well-known singer, numerous albums. He's just for shorthand, Paul, you're involved in various tenor groups. You're Ireland's answer to Michael Ball. That's a compliment to him and to you, by the way. But Paul, you contacted us about the housing crisis and what's happening you at the minute.
Yeah, Joe, lovely to have you to be on. Thanks for having me and for the lovely intro. Yeah. I'd love to be ringing you with like a good news story for a change, but like this yesterday I was knocked for six. So as we have discussed on this show a couple of times over the pandemic, and I have to compliment everybody involved in your production, you know, you really highlighted the plight of people in the music business over the pandemic, and for that I thank you. But there recently I'm renting at the moment because I'm trying to save and I'm hoping to buy a house. Now, listening to your previous caller there and all your other callers, I, in many respects, have come to terms with the fact that I may never own a house in Ireland because, you know, no matter what, even if you have your deposit, you go into a bank and you tell them you're a singer. And if I say, well, Joe Duffy compared me to Michael Ball, it doesn't matter. Like, you're not getting a mortgage with the bank. You have to, your partner, who want to be in a very, by and large, they'd press a little button under the desk and you'd fall into a hole. And so, you know, you kind of accept that, okay, maybe the mindset needs to change. And maybe I need to accept that if I want to live in Dublin or in Ireland, I'm going to have to rent. Now, I have no problem with that. I've never been somebody that's I must have a house and I must have two cars and I must have this, that, the other. I've never been that guy. So I've rented for the last couple of years and I've been very happy in my place, but like anything else, it's growing in on us. And so myself and my partner started looking around to get a house, to rent a house, and we came across a lovely, lovely house. I won't say where it was because I don't want to bring any unwanted attention on it.
Fine, but it was you were looking for another. Why did you have to look for another rental?
Because where I'm at is too small, really, to be honest. So, like, I work from home, obviously, when I'm not on stage, all my office stuff happens from home. So there's the desk and there's the stock and there's all of that stuff. And then there's a girlfriend and everything that comes with a girlfriend. So there's there's clothes and there's all that. So it's growing in on us. And so I just said, you know, we need to look around. Now, we're very happy where we're at. So, and we're very fortunate in that. Again, I'm aware there are people that are having their houses sold from under them. And as you said, that are under pressure to find somewhere. So we are fortunate in that regard. We're not under pressure. But we found the house and it was with the same realtor who I'm renting from at the moment.
Okay.
And I went and met him and saw the house and beautiful. I said, perfect for what we're looking for. And he said, that's great. He says, I'll put you forward. He says, now, the only thing is, he says, I'll say to you, we're not the management company. So the landlord wants to be in control of the management. I said, that's great. No problem with us. And he said, and he'll also want to meet you. Because he wants to know that whoever's moving into the house is of good nature, so to speak.
And was your realtor or your estate agent, as you say, or the person you were dealing with, were they willing to put in a word for you to say on your record?
Yeah. And so he said, look, you know, because I had a property in Blackrock years ago, and he sold that for me, and he sold the family home. So he's a long standing. He knows me. He knows the family, and he said, I'll be sure to put in a good word, and so that was all great. And he says, and the meeting will probably happen on the 20th of September in or around. I thought, great, perfect. I said, look forward to it. Now, Joe, I'd be an awful devil for kind of putting the cart before the horse. I had envisaged moving in and everything. That being said, I got a call then yesterday from them. And they were kind of quite sheepish, and they said, look, he's come back earlier, and, you know, there's two applicants, yourself and another applicant, and we put you through, and we said you were an exemplary tenant, and he turned me down because I'm in the entertainment business.
And the reason is that the income is erratic?
No, I mean, I had letters from my accountant, and sorry, my partner as well is in a steady real world job, as my granddad would call it. You know, so her income went in. My annual income over the last number of years was sent in, so they could see there's a consistency there. And literally, just based on the fact that COVID has damaged the entertainment industry, and he'd be nervous to take on an entertainer. Now, if an entertainer can't buy a house in Ireland, that's one thing. But if it gets to the point where being an entertainer means you can't rent in Ireland, surely to God, exactly. We're in a very bad place.
And there's no point in you saying I'm an electrician or a carpenter, because you only have to Google your name. And Paul Byram is an easily Googleable name. And you come up with 27 albums and your list of movies your music was in, you appeared in your music appeared in.
Well, that's it. I mean, I'd understand if I was just starting out, you know what I mean? Or if I was, no disrespect, but if I was somebody kind of just did it on the side or whatever. You know, like, all he, I suppose, had to do was Google the name in many respects, and that's not blowing smoke. But, you know, that aside, whether it's me or anybody else, you know, I just wonder, are we at a point now where entertainers, like, we weren't treated very well throughout this COVID pandemic, by and large, our industry. Mm. And is it a case now, on top of that, you're kind of going, if you start looking for rent in Ireland, be sure and lie, because you won't get it if you tell the truth.
Now, they weren't saying, Paul, if you're an entertainer, you'd be practicing at home and
playing. Yeah, nothing like that.
They weren't saying anything like that.
No, nothing like that. He was nervous to take me on because the entertainment industry was hampered by the pandemic. And I said to them, I said, do you mind me asking? I said, did you tell them that all the way through this pandemic, I have never missed a payment in my life, let alone through the pandemic? And he said, yeah, we told him you were an exemplary tenant. And it was just disregarded. Now, look, we're both gutted, and it is what it is, and we'll keep looking. But it is a hellhole of a position to be in, trying to find somewhere to rent in Ireland at the moment. And as I said, we're very lucky because we don't have children to worry about. And you know, there are people that are in far worse situations than me. But surely to God, if we're going to get turned down, it should be based on something more than just me being in the entertainment business.
Okay. Well, it's seldom that you hear it so directly, isn't it, Paul?
Yes, I was knocked for six. I got to be honest, and the realtor even was very sheepish in saying it to me. But at least she was honest. I'm kind of appreciated that. But I tell you, Joe, after the year and a half in the industry that it has been, you know, I was gutted. I was real kick in the teeth. You know, I'm 42 years of age, Joe. Like, I'm not a young fella starting out looking to kind of just have a nice gaff and have a party and be in the, you know. Like, I'm long in the tooth, and it's taking everything within me and people like me that are in this business to keep going right now. And so then to kind of get just kicked back like that, It was a really hard day yesterday.
Yeah, okay. And Paul, how has your work been in the last 2 years?
Oh, non-existent. I mean, I do the odd online concert, and I'm very fortunate in that people tune into that and people like what I do. Well, some people do. And I released an album before Christmas, which was very well received. I was lucky to get that done.
Is there money in albums?
Not at all, sure. People nowadays, I mean, how many people have CD players nowadays?
Yeah, true,
you know,
true,
everybody will go, I mean, you can buy four of my albums and use them as coasters. Like, people go on Spotify now, people go on whatever, and you get your 0.004 per play or whatever. Like, there is no money, and you do that, you release albums so that people come to gigs. And if there's no gigs, and even now, I was hoping to get back to the States in November for a tour, and of course, there's a travel ban still in place that Biden hasn't lifted, so that's not an option. Now, look, I'm not on to play the poor me. I've kept going, and I've got the wolf from the door, which is great, but it has taken a lot of thinking outside the box, and it's taken a lot of positive thinking and a lot of just reminding yourself what it is you do and why you do it. And, you know, I suppose you have to remind yourself that you're decent enough at it and just hope for better times. And that's what we do. But when something like that yesterday happens, it really, I suppose, I even turned around to my girlfriend at one point and says, you need to get rid of me and start dating somebody in a banking job or somebody in the real world because you don't deserve this. She doesn't deserve to be turned down because she's dating a tenor.
Yeah. And but anyway, and by the way, just for our listeners, the realtor was kind enough to completely back up what you said, Paul.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. I've rented off him for 3 years.
Sometimes people say, "Oh no, I can't, I don't want to." But they were adamant. That's what they were told. It's because he's an entertainer.
And I had a reference from a previous landlord that I rented off, and it said the exact same. I mean, Joe, sure, you know me off air, and I'm not a wild man, you know, and it's been instilled in me always, whatever bills or whatever you have, make sure your mortgage or your rent is first out, and everything else after that, you know, comes secondary. But I suppose the point I'm wondering, firstly, yesterday was, is it legal? And secondly, you know, I wonder how many other musicians and singers are in my position, you know, around the country. However difficult it is for the rest of us to get rental properties, but to be told then because of what you do. I mean, here's a thing I was thinking. So if Joe Duffy decides he wants to rent somewhere, and they asked Joe Duffy, what do you do for a living? I'm a living in the entertainment business. So there's no guarantee that Liveline will be around next year. You know, there's no guarantees in our game. And so what, Joe Duffy gets turned down because he's in the entertainment business? You, I mean, it's crazy.
But you have been turned down. That's the awful situation. And for Janet, her own situation, where they'd have to vacate the rental property and the rentals in the area are scarce and very expensive. Okay, Paul Bryerham, by the way, check out Paul on Spotify or whatever. I know he only gets 0-0, or better still, go on to his website and buy some of his albums to play in the car. Thanks, Paul.
Kind regards, Paul Bryerham.
Yeah, and Janet as well. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie and 51551 is our text number. Patricia, you were listening earlier on to Mary talking about her friend, Dolores. And we paid some of Dolores' email. She's back to the workplace on Monday. It's one day a week, but she's against it because she feels she's been doing fine on 5 days working from home. And also, if she goes back to work on Monday, her 91-year-old father is going to be left, who needs a lot of assistance, is going to be left in difficulties. Your point, please, Patricia.
Well, look, I do empathise with her, all right, but I'm in the hair and beauty business. And, you can't have it both ways. I have fabulous clients. There's no problem. There's a lot of them come in very early in the morning because I'm willing to work at 7 o'clock or whatever, get them in and out. But you have people coming in during the day that wouldn't normally be able to have an appointment if they were working outside the house. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just object to people taking advantage of that with being employers and whatever, you know. I mean, I've girls who've always come in and they have their children, but they get their child baby-minded when they're coming in for a job, a big job, you know. And
what do you think of Dolores saying I shouldn't have to go back to the workplace for one day a week?
She should have to go back to it. If this didn't happen, she'd be out there. I do empathise. I did have elderly parents. I did have carers coming in. We had to make it, you know. And my sisters, we did make a point to come and go as we could. But, like, she has a job. She has a job. She can't have it both ways. And, like, if you're claiming carers, which I don't know whether she is or not,
No, she's not.
Right. Well, I do. But if her dad falls and she's to leave the house and go to the hospital with him and whatever. But I just object. Girls coming in and spending time with the hair that we normally make on a Saturday.
And are you saying there's people under the blow dryer or whatever waiting to get their colour done? And I'm talking about men and women, by the way. And they're on their laptops. Are they pretending to be in work or they are in work?
Well, they don't know where they are, basically. But that's where they are, you know.
You have to get your hair done on your own time.
Absolutely. And that's what you make your time for. I mean, there's a lot of salons now after losing their staff because in my business, I could actually work from home now if I wanted to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm a fully qualified and paid up tax, you know. But
it gives a new meaning to a permanent job, doesn't it? The meaning of permanent job.
No meaning. You do one thing or the other.
You're getting a perm while you're in your job. Des Hurley, Des, your point, please. You're a bus driver, still doing your bit. You heard the point that Dolores was making. I have to go back to the workplace on Monday. I've been working fine, and the union that represents public sector workers says productivity has actually increased during the working from home duration. Des, your point, please.
Yeah, it probably has, though. There is, as that lady said, if this pandemic ever happens.
Okay, Des, if your phone line ever improves, which it will in a few minutes, I'll talk to you again. Karen McGlinchey's in Donegal. We'll go back to Des in a sec. Karen, your point, please.
Hello, Joe. How are you? Long time no talking to you.
Okay.
I just want to say that I'm self-employed. I am in a very, very similar position to Dolores insofar as I look after my 89-year-old mother, who requires a lot of care also and who has mobility and all sorts of medical problems. Pre-COVID, I would have been working all over County Donegal. I have a weight loss business, Slimmer Us, and that's what I've been doing, travelling all over the county. Once, of course, COVID came along, that all stopped. I was really, really lucky. Like every employer and self-employed person in Ireland, we got government benefits. I got a total of, from the local enterprise office here in Donegal, and same as everybody else, I was able to apply, go through the system. I got grants of €7,500 to get myself online, something I wouldn't have been able to afford to do before this. Now I have clients all over the country, online clients. I also personally here now, because, you know, of the situation of going into groups and stuff, I started back after the COVID doing private consultations. I'm a nurse by profession, but I don't practice in the hospital. But I was doing, and I still am doing, private consultations. So people come to me, and my clients have told me that this is what they prefer because they get a private one-to-one personal consultation.
So,
the point I'm trying to make...
That was bad timing, if ever.
Joe, I have to go back to work now because
Patricia,
I'm working.
You're great, Patricia. Well done
in your
beauty salon. Karen, are you back there, Karen?
Yes, I'm still.
You just said the point. Your point you want to make is
that as a self-employed person anyway, and employers were in the same position. We all got government assistance and government benefits. I mean, I was able to do online courses, the local enterprise office here in Donegal, and not only here in Donegal, I have to give a shout out to Dublin, to Fingal. I mean, I'm doing a course currently, a digital marketing course with them to help me with my business, all over the country. I kind of sign myself up to courses in every county. But the point is, they're available to me, something that I knew nothing about before. Okay. And so they're...
The line's gone again. Let me go to Des and hope against hope. Des,
hello, Joe. Yeah.
Your point, please.
Yeah, my point is that anybody that can go back to work, that has a job and they're young and fit, they should go back to work because...
Go back to the workplace.
Go back to the workplace, yeah, exactly. Yeah, because there was a lot of years in the past, and you remember them yourself, when we didn't have a job to go to, and there was people that have done anything to get a job. Now, the other thing that people would need to watch... There have been at all for a year or a year and a half. They'd want to be careful that the people that had them employed haven't come up with a solution or a scheme not to bother taking them back. Then you'd hear a different attitude because, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people saying, well, we didn't see them for a year and a half. If we could find a way of doing it without them or cutting down on half them, we'd do that and not to be paying rent on offices in the city, you know. Now, there's a lot of places you go into and you see... You know, reception places closed up on that, you know.
And you
wonder, where are these people? So they must be at home getting paid. There has to be. Do you know what I mean? Now, I think,
to address the point that started the programme, Dolores' point, she's been asked to go back to the workplace one day a week to begin with, and she's not happy. She felt that she was delivering 5 days productivity at home, and she was able to... help her father, because she was in the same house, her 91-year-old father. So that not just gave her good work rate, but gave her peace of mind.
Oh, yeah, that's different, Joe. If she has a problem at home, I suppose she'd have to talk to her employers about that. But there's a lot of people that I've met with in the last year, and they're delighted to be at home, and they said, I'd never like to go back to work again. Now, that's not a good attitude. It's not good for anybody. It's not good for your mind. It's not good for your health. You know, if you're willing and able and you have the health to do it, I think you should get out and go to work and be glad you have a job. And
So Dolores should make arrangements to go in on Monday.
Well, if she can. No, I didn't come on to talk
well,
about
the, no, no, I, but the, well, that's what we're talking about. You know? But the employer is saying you have to come back to the workplace.
Yeah.
There's no. He's saying he or she, by the way, is saying.
I know. Yeah.
He or she is saying there's no leeway. I'm letting you work 4 days from home. All I'm asking is one day in the workplace. What's the problem?
That's a bit of a it's a bit sticky that one, but I.
Or have people, you alluded to, have people got used to walking the dog and going to the gym and...
They probably have, you know, because they have time on their hands that they never had before, do you know what I mean? Now, I know there was talks of employers bringing in a system that they could check on the computer that you were logging in all the time and all that, you know, maybe, I don't know, can that happen? But there's a lot of people that never got a chance to stay at home. They didn't want to be at home. They had to go to work. Good or bad, anyway, they had to go, do you know what I mean? And, like, I mean, they got through it, you know, so I think people should be glad. You know, Joe, we all remember the days that when you didn't have a job. I remember good friends of mine that had to take the boat even for 6 months to get work. They had their family here and come back for a few months and go again if they got a job, do you know what I mean? You know, that's not true. We don't want to go back to them days.
But
you know?
The other days we don't want to go back to, Des, is people... sitting on the M50 when it was a toll bridge, especially when there was you had to queue up for at the checkpoint there. Like, people were spending 4 hours every working day, 20 hours a week.
Yeah, well,
sitting in
I know,
a car.
Yeah. If they use public transport, I suppose that would
well, there's not well, you know, well, if there was, like most people in London, regardless of their profession, would never think of getting into a car because the public transport is there. There's an underground. There's a massive underground. You know, is the public transport there? We don't have an underground. Well, it must be the only capital city of its size in the world.
We don't have the underground, but there is a fairly good network there now, all right, you know. And, like, the bus lines and everything, they're all working well, you know. Yeah.
Okay.
But there's another thing I would say, Joe, with the hospitality.
Yeah.
If they want them back in the hospitality, they'll get them back in the hospitality too if they pay them. Because they're well able to charge in restaurants and pubs and all this. If they want them back, they'll get them back. If they pay them, you know?
Okay. Des Gurumina Margaret, that's Des Hurley, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Celine, the background to this story is just so... so difficult. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Why have you contacted us?
My brother was diagnosed with bowel cancer early in the year, and they tried chemo and radiotherapy with him, but the chemo was affecting his heart. He was taking heart attacks, so they had to stop it. And then they told him on his birthday, the 9th of July, that he had 6 months to live.
Oh, God.
No,
I'm so
treatment.
Sorry. I'm so sorry.
Now, he's in hospital a long time.
Okay.
He was in during COVID. He's MRSA, so he's in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
His family weren't allowed to visit. So he was in a room, literally coping with himself. And he couldn't look after himself at home, in his own home. So his daughter said she'd take him to live with him.
Okay.
But she only has a downstairs cloakroom, really.
Small toilet, basically.
And a toilet wash basin. And she has six young children. She's 6 under 15 and a 9-month-old baby.
Okay.
But he's in the living room in the house at the moment because he can't get upstairs to the bathroom to shower. They let him out of hospital only about 3 weeks ago with a care package they tried to get in place for somebody to come in and try and help care for him. But the big problem was he can't be showered.
Yeah.
And with bowel cancer, you know.
It's very important. It's very important for everybody.
And dignity, you know.
Dignity, yeah.
He's in a living room with young kids and they have to be put out and he has to be changed and, you know.
Yeah, I understand.
It's absolutely horrific, to be honest.
And he doesn't want to go back to hospital given what he's...
No.
But you couldn't inflict that. And just the very thought of Frank in a hospital for, how many months or weeks was he in hospital on his own looking at the floor?
For the most part of over 18 months.
Oh, God. And mainly no visitors, window visits or anything?
We got in St. James's in the latter part of COVID, we'd say during the summer, June maybe, we got the, it was like going to see somebody in prison in that you sat each side of a perspex divide.
Yeah.
And you couldn't touch them, or you couldn't. And his speech is very poor, so even to make out what he was saying was pretty bad, you know.
Yeah.
So we got that. We got a compassionate visit because he actually stopped eating at one stage, and he got pretty weak. And
why did he stop eating, Celine?
He just couldn't cope anymore, I think.
And was it a protest or just he was?
No, I think also the same food.
Up.
Day in, day out,
For
18 months, the diet.
These are stories that went on during that pandemic that we need to hear about. How awful.
And we couldn't see him, you know, that was the other thing. And
did anything help him in on his own? I know the staff would have been brilliant. The staff were very good. Run off their feet.
Yeah.
But could he watch telly or radio or an iPad?
Believe it or not, his radio is his lifeline. You know, he does listen to the radio. But he just lay there all day.
Oh, God.
His mobility is poor if he wants to get up and try and get even to this little cloakroom. He's on a frame, a Zimmer frame. But even now, his legs in the last 2 days are starting to give way, so he has to be carried. And this morning, he collapsed, and he's actually back in Tala Hospital this morning.
No. And the reason for your call is...
He can't get a stairlift grant to go upstairs.
Why not?
Well, it's not that he can't. It's just the time on it is prohibitive, particularly when you have a limited amount of time.
Yeah.
Like they said, we put in the application straight away when we heard he was coming home. And they sent it back to say there was insufficient information. So we reapplied. But we also contacted a very nice lady in the Minister Donnelly's office.
Okay.
And she said that when we reapplied, she would ring the grants office and see if she could put any leeway on it to get it moving. And the grants office contacted my niece, who's looking after him, to tell her that it's on somebody's desk. It could probably be looked at in the next fortnight. Then survey will have to be done.
Yeah.
And then it'll be 12 weeks.
Oh, and the clock is ticking.
And then also the lift people that will be making it has to be engineered because there's a turn on our stairs.
Yeah.
And that'll be another 4 weeks.
Yeah, but the stairlift people, there's lots of brilliant stairlift companies that know, they've done every permutation. That's their business. That's
job. They're not.
But I'm saying once the decision is made, they'll get stuck in.
But it's a cost as well, because it's an extra cost for the stairlift to go up around.
Yeah.
So he kind of said, you know, there's money there to bury me. We can use that. And the stairlift people will buy the lift back later on. So I kind of said, this is not right, because he's worked up to the age of 71.
Yeah.
He spent his last 15 years working for the HSE.
What did he do on the HSE?
He was a plumber, maintenance in the nursing homes in Kildare and surrounding areas.
Well done.
Yeah. So it really...
And why is he back in Tala, Celine?
He had he was very weak this morning and he had chest pains. And he couldn't sit up. And the carer couldn't get him up. to even get a basin and flannel to wash him. Yeah. So he was saying his chest, he had pains, and he's 7 stents in. So we can't take chances with him. So he's back in Tala.
And how is he in himself today? Is he cast down? Is he?
Oh, he's not himself at all. He's this very private person. Mm. This is another thing.
Yeah.
And he struggled a lot with wearing pads and things like that.
Yeah,
and it's so undignified for him. If you knew the man, you know, it was horrible. But he accepted that that was the only way you could do. But, like, his grandchildren are also restricted because the sitting room he's sleeping in.
Yeah, but I'm still thinking when he's in that sitting room as opposed to being in a hospital room.
It's better.
Oh, you can hear the activity, you can hear their voices, you can
the
hear them shouting.
And the children are very young, so they're very entertaining.
And they stick their head in, Uncle Frank, how are you keeping Uncle Frank? And
no, Grandad.
Oh, Grandad. Okay, yes, sorry, yes, sir, Grandad.
Yeah, Grandad's fine.
Yeah, and how Grandad, you need anything? And Grandad, I have this thing from school, or Grandad, Johnny's after hitting me, Grandad.
They're terrific little
what a
supporters,
joy. What a joy. No, he has to be at home.
Yeah.
And is there any indication from Tala when he might be let home? Or is...
They're not sure at the moment. They're still assessing him. They're going to try and do a workup on him, as they call it, to see if they can bring him up. You know what I mean? Because he's pretty frail at the moment, weak at the moment. So they'll do a bit of work on him.
Anna, so have you priced getting a stair lift in? And do stair lift companies take the stair lift back?
Only if you buy them new. If you buy a reconditioned one, which would be more in a kind of a reasonable bracket for that stairs, they will buy them back. But if you get a reconditioned one, they don't. And the new one was 8,500.
A brand new one is 8,500.
Yeah. It's beyond, you know.
Yeah.
So the reconditioned one was coming in at 4,700, I think it was, in around 4,700. And we were thinking, he was thinking of using his money to do that. But then they told him that because it was reconditioned, they wouldn't buy it back. And because it was a curved stairs, they, you know, they could only use the chair again, but not the rail, because it was custom-made door stairs. You can understand. You know?
What's the visiting situation in Tala these days?
You have to make an appointment if you want to go and visit him. And they're very good about it on weekends. But I don't know. This was the last time he was in there, but I don't know now what it is. And he can't go outside.
And is he in a ward at the moment? Or is he
he's still, I'd say, in A&E. He'll be going to a ward, to a side room, because of his MRSA.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, God.
His partner was in there as well, actually, with him. And she's in her 80s. And they couldn't see each other because of COVID. They were separated. And she was too ill to be brought out. So they could meet on the road outside, but she was too ill to be brought out. And they wouldn't let him on the ward or her be brought down.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's so cruel, you know.
This is a cruel, cruel pandemic that's been visited on the world. It really is.
But I'd love something to be in place for people in this situation, because this is not the first time I've encountered this, that people have tried to get aids and help for somebody who's terminally ill, and they end up the
person. There's no point in going the other way, and that is building a shower downstairs. Is there any space for that?
No, there isn't. And then you're looking at the cost. Yeah. And if you go through the planning, they have to send out surveyors. And, you know, he's got the occupational therapy. He paid for the occupational therapist to come out and check the stairway and put in the recommendations for it. And that was all submitted to the council.
Yeah.
So
it really is
a time factor.
And it's about dignity, isn't it? And
dignity, it is about dignity.
In this, at this time.
And he doesn't want to be taken ill in front of his small grandchildren.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't want to see him distressed.
And where's Frank from originally, Celine?
He's from Palmerstown and Lucan area.
Okay.
He's close enough to you.
Yeah.
Lived all his life there.
Oh, God. Well, God, I'm thinking of him so strongly at the minute. That doesn't butter any parsnips. I hope he gets into a room in Tala fairly soon.
Ah, he will. They're very good to him,
and
to be honest.
His little lifelines.
Service has
that,
been excellent to him over years.
Well, he deserves nothing but goodness.
Yeah.
He deserves
if
nothing
but
goodness.
If he could just get that bloody lift, pardon the expression, it'd be great.
Now we get on to the council, and they say they don't comment on individual cases.
Oh, I know that. Council closes doors very fast when you
Frank,
try to contact
Frank Nolan.
Yeah.
You deserve nothing but goodness, Frank.
Thank you.
Nothing but goodness. You have it in your family. You have it in your family. And little material things would make a difference. But Frank, you deserve nothing but goodness. You really do. Thanks indeed, Celine. Thanks indeed. And we'll keep in touch. If you need
thank
that,
you,
let's
Joe.
Keep in
thanks
touch.
Thanks very much for taking the call.
Thanks for making the call. Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Marion, good afternoon. Marion Cunningham.
Good afternoon, Joe.
I think you should buy a lotto ticket because you're the luckiest person. Your home has been hit by lightning twice.
Yes, well, my TV, my phone and a set-top box have been wiped out twice in 18 months.
And why?
Well, that's what I'm hoping to find out. Basically, the TV repairman would say, yes, he has lots of TVs in. He told me that in this country, that aerials and satellite dishes are not earthed, and that in other countries it is the law to have this done. But then the nice man who repaired my satellite dish, he had, in 15 years ago, he met one person that whose satellite dish was, this happened to. But in all, a long, long number of years, that was the only person. And in that case, the lightning had hit it because it had been blown off the wall or roof or wherever it was positioned. Mm-hmm. But in my case, it's just that two TVs, my phone and the set-top box.
And were you in the house when the lightning struck?
Yeah, and it was one clap of thunder, but, you know, it didn't seem, it wasn't bad. 18 months ago when it happened, it was, you know, it was a very bad storm. But this was just literally one clap of thunder. And the LN...
Do you hear a bang or do you hear a crash or do you hear a wallop?
No. But you see, there's no sign of anything on the wall. This satellite dish is positioned... or maybe only less than 2.5 meters from the ground, in actually, you know, around 7 foot or less. In actual fact, the man who repaired it was able to repair it while standing on the ground.
Okay.
And there was another satellite dish positioned higher, and it wasn't damaged. So everybody is baffled by it.
And is it expensive to get it replaced and reconfigurated, or is it simple job?
Yes, this part on it, this LNB, had to be replaced again.
Is your electrician saying, or your installer saying, if you earth it, that would make a difference? So
The installer said, the TV repairman suggested that, but the installer said no, and he had talked to several other people, you know, who do this work, and they felt that it would cause a build-up. If you earth it, it would cause a build-up of static electricity, which would, in fact, attract lightning.
Okay, so it's a catch-22.
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, and everybody is baffled, you know, and everybody thinks I'm most unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is, in actual fact, it's the third time in the space of about 4 years, because the first time it was just my phone line. And when I shouldn't say phone line, it was just my phone, because my phone is actually connected to the modem, not to an air phone line.
Okay.
And I do have surge protectors, and I replaced the surge protectors the last time, thinking that would be the answer. But then the TV repairman said, no, it's coming down the line from the...
And is there any danger to you or the house? Could the house be set on fire? The roof?
I don't know.
That's happened.
Well, it's actually on a wall, you know what I mean? It's on a side wall, down low on a side wall. I don't know. But it is, it's baffling, and I really want to get an answer because it's costing me a fortune.
According to the Guinness Book of Records, one man was hit by lightning 7 times and survived. He holds the world record for surviving after lightning strikes. He was a ranger called Sullivan, Roy Cleveland Sullivan. And he was a United States park ranger in Shenandoah National Park in Virginia. But you're twice, the house twice.
Yeah, 3 times really in total. So I might be heading for the Guinness Book of Records, so for attracting lightning.
Okay.
But I don't want to go there, so I'm hoping somebody might have an answer.
Okay. Why? Okay, satellite dishes, do they attract lightning? And if so, why? And above all, is there a solution? Marion, will you mind yourself?
Yes.
Will you stay airted, love? Please.
I'll stay airted.
Stay grounded, won't you? Don't lose a run of yourself. Stay grounded. Okay, Marion, mind yourself.
Thank you for that.
You're very good. Very good. Thanks, Marion. Stephen wants to remember one of the greats, Clive Sinclair. Has died at the age of 81, home computing engineer. Stephen, go ahead, eulogise Clive Sinclair. Why should he be remembered and what is his legacy?
Thanks, Joe. Yes, Sir Clive Sinclair died yesterday, age 81. Yeah. I mean, he was the first person to invent the pocket calculator, but probably most people of my age will remember him for his home computers. He launched the first home computer that was under £100, the ZX80 in 1980, the ZX81. And what a lot of us remember was the ZX Spectrum, which was a small colour computer that probably introduced a whole generation into personal computing.
And what could you do on those?
Price.
What could you do on those computers, Stephen?
I think most people at the time used them. I mean, I was a teenager. We used them for gaming. I mean, there was no internet in those days. Yeah. There were bulletin boards. I actually ran a bulletin board in the 80s where you used modems to dial up and connect, but it wasn't quite the same as it is now. People learned programming. I remember when my school got the first computer, an Apple II. I took the manuals home, read them the next week over the weekend, was fascinated by it, and it turned into a job for me. I still work in the IT industry, probably down to people like Clive Sinclair.
And people, I've listened to an interview with him, obviously, from the archive last night, and he talked about the calculator, and he said his motivation for everything he did was to try and improve people's lives. Isn't that incredible?
I mean, he was a great man. He was also one of the first people to introduce an electric car, the C5, which unfortunately was a huge commercial failure for him. I think it lost him over 7 million.
And that was
I can remember as a kid, one of the few shops in Dublin that sold computers, Tomorrow's World in the ILAC Centre, used to go in there and you could test all the machines. I mean, to someone who likes technology, it was like Christmas every day going to there. It was great.
Can you describe for radio the Sinclair C5? It was what, 1985? It was little electric. What would you call it? Little buggy, something like a child would go around in. But
yeah, it was like a small tricycle. It was a bicycle that you kind of sat into with three wheels. But it was very, very low down. Anyone Google, just look at C5. But the crazy thing now, Joe, is they're worth a lot of money, like his early computers. Yeah, I mean, retro computers, you can pay maybe €1,000 for a ZX80 in good condition.
Okay.
They're starting to go up in value.
And the many C5s, these little three-wheelers, electric, way ahead of their time. In 1985, 36 years ago, this man was talking about, when we look now at the electric scooters, we look at the electric cars, the plug-in hybrids or whatever, he was so well ahead. And it was a lovely design, a bit low, but that can be addressed with flags or whatever, something protruding. Why did it flop?
I think probably because a lot of people thought it was quite dangerous. It was very low. The range was 20 miles, which wasn't far. But then again, if you just go into the local shop, you had no protection from the weather. It did go 20 miles an hour, which was very fast.
Yeah.
But a lot of people just thought it was a menace on the roads. But he was ahead of his time. I mean, who knows, in 10 years' time, we'll all be driving electric cars.
But it was like, do you remember the images, Stephen, on TV? It was like he was in a little boxcar, you know, the boxcars we used to make. They were so low down. The little trolleys we used to make with the steelies and the wheels from Inchicore Works, the steel wheels, was so low down. Was it that killed it, that it didn't look the part?
Yeah, it didn't look. I mean, people thought they were unsafe. As you said, people used to stick flags on them. It was a great idea. Unfortunately, it was just pure badly executed.
Well, God rest them. I know a few people here used to carry in
early computers on their in a massive backpack every morning into this complex and set it up every day. And that now you just carry your computer in your smartphone. Stephen Kieran, thanks for remembering Clive Sinclair. Just want to get to Geraldine before I finish. Back to that story about Frank Nolan and the situation he's in and trying to get a stair lift. Geraldine, you're saying you have a stair lift.
Yes, Joe, I have a stair lift. Like Celine, is it Celine?
I didn't hear the first story. And does it have a turn on it?
It has a turn. Now, you know, I'm not sure if it can be made suitable for her stair lift, but I'm sure, you know, it's in perfect condition and she's very welcome to it because
and I'm sure a
my parents have just passed away
after
getting it taken out.
But so. I'm sure a company will come forward and help us. You're in Drogheda, but what we'd need first, Geraldine, is send us as many photographs of it as you can and put markers beside it to give us a sense of perspective and distance, and we'll get someone to look at it or pass it on to Celine because she's been in touch with stairlift people and to see can we get it in for Frank ASAP and give him the dignified time he deserves. Okay, Geraldine, thanks for that offer. Well done and condolences on the passing of your parents. Today's programme produced by Annette Egan, research Richard Byrne, sound Liam Mullen, the series producers Rebecca Meehan, BCO Daniel Keating, and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul with a range up to 452 kilometres.
1850 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. Or email joe@rte.ie.